doing?
Each year we have a headliner at Ticket Stock. Our headliner this weekend will be signing autographs coming up at 1:30 here at the Irving Convention Center. And he joins us now here on the round table.
Thank you.
Played 15 seasons in the NFL. He's a six-time Pro Bowler, five-time first-team All-Pro. His career totals, second all-time in receiving yards behind Jerry Rice, third all-time in receiving touchdowns behind Rice and Randy Moss, and he's the only player in NFL history to score a touchdown against all 32 NFL teams. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome the former Cowboy great, Terrell Owens.
Yay.
How you guys doing?
Yeah.
Welcome to Ticket Stock.
Thanks for having me.
So how does it feel to be back in Dallas? You get memories coming back of your time here with the Cowboys. And in general, what are those memories?
Yeah, how can I not? I mean, this is a place where, you know, Jerry Jones gave me an opportunity to extend my career. And I told him, I remember at the press conference, to get your popcorn ready. And,
you know,
and so for me, I just wanted to come in and try to do whatever I could. To try to get the team to where it hadn't been in a while, and that was obviously to the playoffs. And you know, we didn't win the championship, but for me, I just tried to come in and do what I've been doing throughout my career, and that was you know, bring some energy to the team, you know, come out and just play at a high level and play the best brand of football that I knew how.
There seemed to be tension between you and Bill Parcells. Was that an accurate perception, or did you get along fine with
him? Maybe he had tension with me, but I didn't have any with him. And I think as things kind of unfolded, I didn't know or didn't realize that he had the feelings that he did toward me. Again, I guess I was just oblivious to it, and I really didn't pay too much attention to it till afterwards. But other than that, I came in. I thought he was on board with me being here in Dallas, but that didn't, you know, seem to be the case. But I, again, you know, Jerry Jones runs the team. He brought me in to help, and that's what I did. So, you know, if anybody has any preconceived notions about me or any ill feelings toward me about my character or anything like that, I mean, you have to sit down and be around me for more than 5 minutes or read some clips or read some press. So I think that's what a lot of people have really gotten from a lot of the media portrayal of my character, so to speak. So other than that, man, I've always been the same person. There's been a number of guys that have, you know, gone out on the limb to try to defend me in terms of my character and how I was in the locker room. But again, you know, where social media is now, if it was really that way back then, I would have been able to dispute or dispel some of those things. But other than that, I just tried to do whatever I could. The media is very, very powerful. And so I realized, you know, the way that people perceive me now is based on the media's inaccurate portrayal of who I was. And so I
really, so you think social media could have helped you?
Absolutely.
Really?
I mean, it's really now it's a platform really for a lot of guys to really, really kind of, again, dispute or dispel anything that's going on out there. And so
they can go around the media and straight to the fans.
Exactly. I mean, there's no middleman. So again, you know, had I been able to have that platform, there were times where I did interviews where I tried to defend myself, but with a lot of people that don't know much about the media, you know, there's something called editing. And so they edit it to the way they want to portray it and, you know, for people to see it across the country. And so that's how it all happened.
But you don't think there was a chance that you could have, if you were on social media, that you would have won some people over, but a few drunk tweets from you would have ruined all that?
Well, I don't really drink. So
See, a media guy being
see,
wrong again.
Exactly. So yeah. You wouldn't have gotten any drunk tweets from me. or my platform had gotten hacked.
Uh-huh.
So,
right. Like a bucket of wings kind of thing. And
yeah.
All of a sudden you're hacked.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a situation where a coach would not mention a player by name, but he only called you the player. Did that bother you?
No, not at all. I mean, that says a lot about him more so than it says about me. You know, again, first and foremost, you know, I never really thought I would play beyond the collegiate level. You know, when I came from Benjamin Russell High School in Alexander City, Alabama, I wasn't heavily recruited out of high school. I only went there because they were recruiting another receiver on our high school team. And then, again, things just kind of just unfolded. Things started to happen while I was in Chattanooga. And so my freshman year, I really didn't play much. And then I went home for my the off season, the summer. I got myself bigger, faster, and stronger. So the sophomore year was somewhat of my my breakout year.
Mm-hmm.
Things kind of just started to get better and better. I played basketball there, 3 years of basketball at UT Chattanooga as well as football. And, you know, I consider myself an athlete. He should have just called me the athlete, because that's how I feel like I was able to really be as good as I was on the football field, because I wasn't just a football player,
mm-hmm.
Especially considering, you know, for a number of kids out there that want to play sports, they have dreams to play sports. I never really had a dream to play in the National Football League, but if I can make it, and obviously you guys read off my statistics, to have achieved some of the things that I have, those kids out there that you guys are listening, you guys can make it too.
You obviously had some huge postseason performances, including one in a Super Bowl. But the moment I think of is the one at Texas Stadium where you went to the Star as a really enjoyable moment to just relive on many, many levels. And I'm curious where that rates for you.
It's definitely a highlight, you know, for, again, prior to me playing with the Cowboys, you know, you guys, we were called the America's team. And so we came in, you know, we flew in from the West Coast, and we had a walkthrough prior to the game that weekend. And so we as receivers, you know, we went through our walkthrough. The practice was over. And my coach, we just happened to end up at the middle of the field. And so at this point in time, I think this is where, you know, my personality had started to come out. I was doing touchdown celebrations left and right. And I started to kind of run out of things to do. And so my coach, you know, we were standing right in the middle of the field. And so he looked up and he looked at me. He goes, T, you know, this is, you know, they say this is, you know, God's team. This is America's team. You know, and it's like the hole is in the ceiling because, you know, God looks down on the best teams there. So he basically said, you know, if you score tomorrow, you know, show them who's the best, you know. And so that's what I did. It was really nothing, you know, no malicious intent. It was just pure out of pure fun and enjoyment of the game. And obviously it didn't come off that way when I did it. And so the first time I did it, you know, it was what it was. And then the second time I did it, George T came out and hit me. And the thing is, a lot of people think that it was really about – it really wasn't about me going to the Star. And I've tried to explain this, and I think if anybody has seen the NFL Network special on me –
The Football Life.
Right. I went on to explain it, and George Stewart, my receiver coach at the time, he went on to explain it as well. But prior to the second time me going out to the middle of the Star, you know, we were down on the goal line, and so I was on our goal line package, and so they used me in a number of ways, and so I was on the outside of the formation, and so I went to block, you know, because Garrison Hurst was going to run it in, and so that's what made me so dominant as a receiver, because I didn't just catch the ball all the time. I was a physical blocker. I that was my passion too, to pancake a DB if I had to. So George T came up and I blocked him and I pancaked him. So he was probably more upset about that, and that was his time to get me back than anything. So that was that story.
Follow up, your head coach Steve Mariucci claimed
he hit
the roof after the game. did that happen in the locker room? Did he give you an earful after the game?
No, that's not accurate at all.
Okay.
I mean, he said he didn't see me go to the Star neither time. So he's right there with more than a view than anybody else.
Okay.
And does George Teague still come out of nowhere at odd times and just hit you for no reason? Trying to buy a hot dog and all of a sudden Teague?
No. I think I may have run into him maybe once or so after that. I haven't run into him since.
How about Hugh Douglas? Have you run into him lately?
I think anybody.
You were in a controversial episode with him once upon a time when you and he got into an altercation in the Eagles locker room. And
right.
As I believe you're coming out of the shower at that time. And the guy that I do the afternoon drive show has always wondered, when you fought him, were you nude?
No, I wasn't. Actually, I was rehabbing. I was in the HydroWorks pool. And he wasn't even playing for the team at this point in time. He was, considered the team ambassador or what have you. So, for whatever reason, you know, he got involved in something that he shouldn't have gotten involved with. And I was in a separate area. The door was cracked, and he came in and said something about guys, you know, pretending or faking to be hurt and things of that nature. And so I didn't really take too kind to that. And so, you know, I came up out of the HydroWorks pool, and You know, there was a little confrontation, but, you know, my grandmother always told me never to let anybody run over you. And so, you know, no matter how big or small you are, that's just how I was raised. And so there was a situation where I had to take, you know, defend myself. So other than that, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal. You know, it was an altercation, but, you know, at the end of the day, I think the word got around the league that, you know, I didn't take the I didn't lose.
Didn't lose.
Yeah. Okay.
Were you nude in the high door?
He dug us as a big dude.
No, no. Well, it doesn't matter how big you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's kind of, like I said, that's how I was raised. And so for me, there was a couple of times during, you know, as I grew up, I was victim to bullying. And so it got to a point, you know, that was kind of what motivated me really to really get in the weight room too, because I was little, skinny and scrawny. And, you know, going through high school, I had guys to pick on me. You know, for whatever reason, I got picked on for being dark skinned, things of that nature. So, it got to a point to where I had to learn how to defend myself. And so my grandmother basically said, you know, if you go off and you get beat up or whatever, when you get to the house, you're going to get another whooping. So, those were some of the things that I lived by. And so it didn't matter, you know, who you were and how big you are. I was going to always defend myself.
Only five wide receivers have ever made it into the Hall of Fame on their first ballot. You came close this time on your first ballot. How did it feel to be on the ballot but not make it for the first time? And do you feel like you'll eventually get in?
No, I felt more so disrespected, and I've touched on this a number of times. And I think you guys know my stats speak for itself. And so I think everyone realizes that there is a flaw in the system. I didn't really have to say a whole lot. I think, you know, around the country, I mean, 2 weeks after the Super Bowl, this whole induction, people are still talking about it. So obviously there's something that needs to be changed about it. And I never really played the game to get in the Hall of Fame anyway. So, again, I'm used to it. You know, I probably would have been more surprised had I made it. So to have someone, you know, really, really induct me or really kind of just I don't know. It just it's one of those things where it's a shame, you know, for someone and some pencil pushers to really vote guys in, considering the body of work that they've done and put out on the football field. And so I think for me, what I've done throughout my career speaks volumes.
What do you think ought to change? What do you think ought to put former players on a panel for this, or what do you think should change?
I think so. Again, I just think it's a shame. I think it's you know, to be in the Hall of Fame, I think it should be an exciting moment in any player's career and their lives, you know, commemorating what they've done on the football field. And I think, you know, for me, a lot of people have brought up the character issues, and I went on to debate, you know, Skip a couple of weeks ago. And
that's always fun, isn't it?
A lot of people, again, you know, there's a lot of hearsay, and that's why what I mentioned to you about social media.
Yeah.
You know, Skip Bayless has gone on to say that he's talked to different people in the locker room or what have you. But I asked him, I'm like, who are the people that you're talking about? Hearsay and anonymous sources. I mean, I attached some names to it. And so I went on to do my research, too. And of all the locker rooms that he said that people have said that I was divisive or wasn't a good teammate or whatever player, I can, you know, I rattled off some names that, you know, to combat that or dispute that. So it is what it is.
Well, he used to work with us, and we don't like him.
Yeah,
either,
we got your back on Skip Bayless.
Yeah, we're with you on
We'll have a street fight with you sometime with Skip Bayless.
Did you hear the detail that you were debated the longest by far? Like 41 minutes they had to sit there and debate about you?
Well, I mean, that just shows you, you know, and, you know, just tells you kind of, you know, really what's going on with the process.
Man, you kind of love that, though. People are talking about
you.
Well, again, everything, you know, it has its timing. I don't really, like I said, I don't really worry about it too much. If I had made it, you know, I think it would have been more of a surprise to me than anything. But, again, I didn't hang my hat on making it. I wasn't disappointed. Again, I just went about my day, you know, so.
You once said in a pretty emotional moment that that's my quarterback, about Tony Romo. In fact, it still lives on the internet to this day.
Right.
I was curious if you could characterize your relationship with him, whether there's one presently, but at the time. Because, again, on the outside, it felt like there was tension, and yet you would speak very highly of him. So and then, of course, the Cowboys cut off the relationship early.
Well, yeah, I mean, at that point in time, I think, again, there's a lot of guys that can attest to you or really give you some insight on who I am as a player on the practice field, on the game field, and just in general in the locker room. And so I've always been that guy. I'm a very caring guy. I've done a number of things for a lot of guys throughout my career that a lot of people don't know about. And it's not for publicity's sake. That's just who I am. And so for me, I understood, you know, where Tony had come from. He had sat on the sideline for a couple of years and watched and waited for his time. And so once he got that nod to be the quarterback of the Cowboys, you know, I think it was magic in the making. I think we clicked instantly. And so for me, during that time, that was a time where he was dating Jessica Simpson and a lot of things were going on at that time. And I think he had taken a vacation or something right before the playoffs, and he caught a lot of slack because of that. And again, myself, I had gotten injured, I think, maybe a week or two prior with a high ankle sprain. And again, we ended up there was a playoff, I think it was a playoff game, and we lost. And,
yes, to the Giants.
Right.
The Giants,
and so yeah. I knew that the media was going to blame the loss on Tony, and I didn't really think that that was fair. And so for me, you know, everybody has, you know, that has played the game, they understand that it's a brotherhood, we're family. And so that was me just taking up for him, you know, as if he was my real brother, my blood brother. And so again, I'll do it again. And so with the relationship that we have now, that we've talked a couple of times here and there, but at that particular point in time in my career and at that press conference, that's basically how I felt, you know. And he was my quarterback, and I wanted to defend him, and I wanted him to know that I had his back.
So if we were to look out for some of these guys who would tell us about you that, you know, he's not what you think he is, who would we look to?
I mean, there's a number of guys. I mean, I got a list.
Give us some names.
He's got it on his phone.
I can pull it up for you. Give me one second.
You actually keep a list on your phone?
No,
you had to send it to Skip.
Just your friend. So, you're talking about your
friend. Right, because I figured we were going to have this conversation. So it'd have to be, you know.
So this is going about the way you thought it would?
Yeah. No, it's fun. I don't have a problem with it. I mean, even coming over here, I just happened to stroll through my Twitter. And somebody's like, you're a stand-up guy to go on the ticket stock. These guys have talked about you terrible throughout your career.
So bald guy down there.
The bald guy. Here
he is.
Here he is.
Listen to this guy.
So he also says there is no God.
Well, I mean, that's him.
That's him. I mean,
that's ridiculous.
Right.
And he calls himself Sports Sturm.
Yes.
So other than that, man,
What a bunch of sellouts you are. What a bunch of clowns.
Don't call T.O. a
now,
sellout.
I've been critical
no,
of you
T.O.'s
before.
The only one who's not a sellout up here.
Right. So I don't have a problem with that. So, again, I mean, I can go around the list. I mean, from guys
all
like
right, give us some names.
Fred Beasley, Cedric Wilson, obviously J.J. Stokes, Jimmy Ferris, Scott Gregg, Bryant Young, Anthony Adams, Jamie Winborn, Tony Parrish.
These guys are all friends of yours.
Right. These are teammates. Brian Westbrook, John Ritchie.
Why do you think the Cowboys wanted to break up with you?
You know what? There are some things that kind of swirled around right at the end of, I think it was the 2009 season. And I think everybody has heard that, you know, there was some rumbling going around, some whispers about me saying that Tony and Witten were drawing up plays, this and that. And so for me, I understood, you know, where I was in my career, and I wasn't trying to, you know, be divisive in the locker room or anything like that. And anything, you know, from once I got in Dallas, I felt like I had matured a little bit. I wanted to communicate with my coaches, head coaches. And so if there was anything internal going on, we talked about it, even as a receiver group. Whatever said in that room, it stays in that room. And so, again, I think people have kind of heard, you know, there were some things that were leaked out that was supposed to be in-house from meetings that myself, Roy Williams, and Patrick Creighton had with Jason Garrett. And just so happened, you know, of the four of us, and maybe five, with Coach Sherman knowing about that meeting, things got leaked. And that's a shame, because of those four guys outside of Garrett, I'll put my life on it that none of them said anything. And so that's how things had started to kind of down spiral and it got out of control. And so for me, I was all about winning. And so if there was something that I saw in practice that was happening in games and it was causing us to have hardships in games and even losing games, then I had an issue with it. So if I addressed something with my teammates or my coaches or whatever, and I thought it was supposed to be internal, then that's why I said it. I never said it for it to get outside of that, outside of those walls. And so those are some of the things that happened and that had gotten out, and it's unfortunate that it did. But I was, again, I understood my role. If I addressed something about where the ball was going, it wasn't necessarily for me to just get the ball. I understood my role. I mean, I played with the best receiver in the game in Jerry Rice. I went on to play in Philly, where I kind of adopted some of those things, and along with some of the things that I brought to the table, to understand the nature of being the number one receiver. It's not necessary. You have to do the intangibles. That's blocking. That's being a decoy sometimes, and that's really stepping up to the plate when your number's called. And so with me having that level of maturity and understanding of the game, I addressed some of those issues where, you know, sometimes balls were being thrown into double team coverage and guys were open, and that's what I wanted to really address and bring to the attention of the staff. And so some of those things got out, and it's unfortunate. But other than that, that was me trying to be a leader. That was me trying to be a team player for the betterment of the team, because I was here, brought here to win football games and try to get to the Super Bowl.
Was that what they were calling Keeping It Real Thursdays?
Yes, that was that was the meeting that I had we had outside of the Keeping It Real Thursdays, which was only just the receivers. That meeting was held with myself, Garrett, Roy Williams, and Patrick Creighton. So other than that, that's all I can say. I tell you one thing, I just talked to Ray Sherman probably like a few weeks ago, and he's heard everything that was going on, and obviously with the Hall of Fame induction and everybody bringing up the character issues. And one thing he said before he hung up, he said, one thing about you, Terrell, he said, you ask anybody, they can never say that you lied about anything. Pull it up.
Well, you know what? All of us up here, I think, believe that you belong in the Hall of Fame, except for Bob here.
Oh,
and,
shut up.
We're working on Bob down there.
Bob said he could do better.
This has been a treat. We really appreciate you.
Actually, George is on the fence.
It's all good.
I think you ought to be in the Hall of Fame.
My jersey is already in the Hall of Fame. When I caught 20 passes in the game, I wanted to keep my jersey, but they put it in the Hall of Fame. So I was in there anyway. So
okay, well,
matter.
Good. Well, hey, we appreciate you joining us here on the roundtable. It's time for T.O. to sign autographs for the P1s. Ladies and gentlemen, our headliner, the great Terrell Owens.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you.
It's 1:31 here at Ticket Stock 2016. We'll have a lineup change and more roundtables next.